This is John Nance with Redwood Advisors, and I am here with Councilmember Ellen Troxclair of the Austin City Council. And we're really excited to be talking with you, Ellen. I know you've been on the City Council for a few years now. You've been in Austin for a few years. You've got an incredible perspective. You're a public sector official, so you can kind of bring that perspective. We've been mostly talking to business executives, so really excited to be talking with you, and thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been an honor to serve on the Austin City Council as the youngest woman who's ever been elected. I feel like I represent, more of a young voice in the city, and have the ability to look at kind of where the future of Austin is going, rather than kind of clinging to what it's been in the past. Also, I own my own real estate company. And kind of have a foot in the real world, I like to say, working with people on a daily basis that are making major financial decisions about their lives and their kids. And they always want to know, well, what are the property taxes? How's the traffic? And those, they're not connecting that necessarily all the time to Austin City, to the work that I do in Austin City Council, but I get to see how the decisions that the city council makes really impacts people on the ground level.
Great. So before we jump into some of the details of this, particularly kind of looking at this from Austin, from an innovation ecosystem standpoint, would love for people who don't know you as well, who may be listening in, just a little more about yourself. You're obviously on Austin City Council now, but I know you haven't been there your whole life. So would you mind just like a little bit of a biography to kind of ground your story?
Sure. I am 3 years into a 4-year term. Never thought in a million years that I would run for office. It's never been a personal ambition of mine, but just got to a point where I was really frustrated with some of the decisions that the city council was making. I saw how the rising cost of living and what I thought was ineffective, inefficient spending really pushing families and kind of the cultural heart of our city out of our city. So that's really that frustration is really what led me to run, and I'll be up for re-election this November.
And what were you before city council? You've been in Texas. Do you mind telling just a little bit pre-city council?
I was lucky enough to get to Austin by way of UT. Really enjoyed my time there, and actually got an internship at the Capitol when I was a student. So that kind of gave me insight into, like, kind of gave me the political policy bug. Really enjoyed working there, and ultimately ended up working there for another several years after I graduated. Again, always as a staffer, kind of behind the scenes, more of a policy person than a campaign or candidate person. But I think it gave me a really good foundation of the state, certainly the state issues that we're dealing with, and kind of that interaction between state government, local government, federal government, and how oftentimes government gets in the way of innovation.
So would love to, one of the things that we talk about in the survey that we've been doing for this to support the interviews has been kind of asking people to assess Austin on this set of criteria. And I was just curious, from your standpoint as a public official, when you look at the list, where would you say, and it doesn't have to necessarily be related to political policymaking, but where you say, hey, I really think when I think about Austin and innovation, what I hear from business owners being a publicly elected official, I see people referring to this as a positive, as a strength. Like, what jumps out when you think about Austin, you think about innovation, you say, hey, I think this is serving us well. I think this is an advantage for us.
I think certainly the kind of the cultural atmosphere that we have in Austin, that there's tons of things to do outdoors. We're known as the live music capital. We have plenty of art museums and ballet and kind of everything that you want, that we still have a little bit of a small town feel, but with all of the amenities of a bigger city. Of course, that comes with growing pains and lots of other challenges. But and the people that I talk to who are moving here, they're moving here because they see Austin as kind of a hip, forward-thinking city that just has a lot of opportunity.
It's interesting when you look at the results. We've got, pretty good, healthy sample now of people giving us results. And the number one thing that people of the 10 plus things that we actually survey on is quality of life. Actually, really funny enough, the number one thing from a, when we ask them to take a business perspective and look at, think from innovation, the number one thing is quality of life, because they say it helps attract people, it helps retain people, and then it helps kind of create a milieu where people can kind of think outside the box. So it's really interesting. It's not the thing I would have expected, but the survey results kind of support, you know, what you had to say.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised by that. It's a lot easier to get really talented people to move to a city with a reputation like Austin than it is to Oklahoma.
Right, right.
Sorry to pick on Oklahoma.
So would love to look at the other side of the coin, and we can kind of bounce back and forth, you know, back and forth here on the positives and, you know, things that are really working for us now and maybe things that are holding us back. But I know, you know, you've had some frustration on city council. There's obviously been some things I think it would be really hard to make an argument for as being particularly innovation, you know, oriented, like we had the ban on lifted Uber. I know there's been some strict regulations of short-term rentals, et cetera, which, you know, as an outsider, as a third-party perspective, it's hard for me to think that that's innovation fostering. What's your perspective? I mean, you're on city council and, you know, you guys do some things that I think foster innovation, or you do things that, that hinder it. What jumps out? What have you heard that, that you think would be interesting for people to know?
Certainly that time period that we went through where the city put such stringent restrictions on Uber and Lyft that they'd made the decision to leave the city, followed really shortly after that by more or less a complete ban on full-time short-term rentals, was, I think, seen not just in Austin, but truly nationwide as really stifling the sharing economy, which, of course, is one of the biggest, most important trends that we've seen lately when it comes to innovation. I think that that was a really black eye for the city, and it was really interesting to hear the mayor during that time consistently say in his talking points that the government was simply innovating too fast for Uber and Lyft, or, you know, for these private companies in the private sector that clearly had a market demand for their services. That to me just demonstrated such a tangible misunderstanding of how the innovation ecosystem works, in my opinion. That's not at all how I saw the situation. And of course, in hindsight, as we've seen it play out, all of the new companies that he was allowing to innovate ultimately weren't able to thrive. So I think that again just kind of speaks to the get government out of the way, let innovative business owners, entrepreneurs figure out where there's a need and where there's a demand in the market, and do what you can to support them rather than looking for ways to regulate them and to charge fees from them. You know, I think it translates even down to opening a small business in Austin. I mean, there are so many small business owners who have said, you know, I started my small business in Austin 20 years ago, but if I had to do it under the regulations that we see today, I never would have made it. And, you know, it's recognizable names like Amy's Ice Cream, Dan's Hamburgers, people like that who are saying these things that we feel like are kind of a really iconic part of Austin's, of this culture, you know, that we just talked about. That's really concerning. And ultimately, I also think that putting that kind of face from the fear, I think that the fear of overregulation of kind of sharing economy or new innovative businesses has ultimately led to the scaring off of some investors who would otherwise be really interested in investing in Austin. And some major investors have kind of said that publicly, that they're not going to invest any more of their venture capital in Austin in this current regulatory environment.
And give some examples of that, just to, I don't know if they're on public record, but just yeah. People that have been public about that.
Sure. I mean, Mike Maples of Floodgate, who, you know, is from Austin and who's a big supporter of the city, was just flabbergasted by the way that the city council dealt with the sharing economy issues. And he very publicly stated that he wouldn't be investing in any kind of emerging technologies in Austin because of the restrictive local regulatory environment. And you really just can't get more direct proof than that. You know, it's one thing, I think one thing that Austin has going for it is that it's in the state of Texas. So we have a reasonably low tax rate, good business environment. But when that's kind of layered, when the city of Austin taxes and regulations are kind of layered upon that, it really gets kind of harder and harder for people to thrive, whether it's in their personal lives or in their business lives.
Do you know, Alan, has this changed? Like, what historically, you know, when you look at an Amy's Ice Cream, you know, who's been in Austin for a while, you know, and I know she's made a public comment that she's not sure she could even start her company today. Like, has it changed? I mean, has Austin City Council changed? Was it always like, I mean, do you think it's sort of moved in a more regulatory direction in recent years, or has Absolutely. It always been like this?
Yeah, no, I think unfortunately that despite those cries from the small business community, the city has continued to move in the absolute opposite direction. It is nearly impossible to start a small business in the city. Just getting through the different kind of layers of regulate, even understanding what you need to do, and things as simple as we don't have online portals to pay fees, you know, to apply for a permit or to pay fees. You have to come down during business hours, wait in a waiting room, talk to a person in person. I mean, there's just with the government itself is so behind on just basic technology that the rest of us have been using for years and years, that that's really time consuming. And of course, you know, as someone who has started a small business, knowing that it's really time is your most valuable asset. This idea that you have to pay a permit expediter in order to get anything done in the city is just really, really concerning. So, I mean, I'm hopeful there are some initiatives to streamline some of this. You know, I co-sponsored a resolution recently that kind of asked the city staff to put together a list of what are all the things that we require permits for so that we can look through them and cross out the ones that maybe aren't necessary or maybe are outdated or duplicative. Unfortunately, we're still waiting for that. And we often see kind of a lot of, you know, it's change is difficult. And we often see a lot of pushback to change. But and certainly there's so many different dynamics, you know. We have Code Next coming up too, and that has kind of caused a division between the neighborhood communities and those who kind of want to keep Austin the way it is, and, you know, people who see that people are going to be moving to Austin regardless of whether or not we plan smart in a smart way for the growth of our infrastructure and how we do that to create a really, you know, connected city that is prepared to accommodate people continuing to come here.
You know, one thing I just wanted to kind of share with you some of the survey results, and we've really focused on, you know, it's been a lot of business executives, but some social sector, you know, leaders and such. So it's a nice kind of cross section. You know, there were two things that have really scored, I think, negatively relative to the rest of the characteristics. And I wanted to kind of get your perspective because they both actually tie to some extent into city policy. One is actually cost of living, and there's a little bit of a nuance there when you actually talk to people and read through their written results. But what they basically say is, obviously, Austin's really affordable relative to some other parts of the country, but it's gotten a lot more expensive. It's not as much of an advantage as it used to be, and people are concerned about where it's going. Was just sort of curious, I mean, what's going on there from your perspective? Like, what role do you think City Council has to play? It's the second from the bottom, you know, of the list of things that people were voting on of the 13 characteristics. What would you offer on that? Just perspective, like, why are we where we are? Where's this going?
You know, unfortunately, the city taxes, City Council has made the decision to increase property taxes, the maximum allowed by state law, which is 8% every year. So the trend that we're on, property taxes will double every 9 years, which is completely unsustainable. And I think is one reason that you see so many people who have lived in Austin for such a long time make the decision to leave the city. So not only are property taxes really kind of getting out of control, but we also have, you know, municipal water and electric. So you're kind of captive to pay. There's not a competitive environment where you're choosing which rates to pay. That combined with the fact that we have very steep rate tiers. So the more water, the more energy that you use, the more you're paying per kilowatt hour or per gallon, which if you have a family of five, I mean, if you're a single millennial who can live in an, you know, $500,000 studio apartment downtown with, you know, all the newest energy efficiency updates, that's great. If you're a family of five, and you're doing laundry and bathing three kids and having a heating and cooling a house that accommodates them, you're getting, I mean, it's almost like you're being the larger, if you have kids, you're being penalized with your utility and water rates, which is a frustration for a lot of our families. And although, you know, it's great that we're attracting millennials here, you can't only have that as the culture of your city. And I think the most interesting ties of what we've talked about so far is actually this rising cost of living, which people are saying are one of the biggest negatives to the Austin innovative ecosystem, is actually impacting the thing that people are saying is the biggest benefit, which is the culture, right? Who is impacted the most when you have rising cost of living? I mean, it's a musician who is playing a few gigs a week, the artist who, you know, isn't necessarily on a regular salary, that kind of creative individual that people are saying, you know, that is creating the fabric of our city, that people rated as the best thing about Austin's innovative ecosystem. Those are the people who are getting pushed out by the cost of living. Of course, that's affecting. I mean, Austin is one of the most gentrified cities in the country. That's been kind of well cited, and it's because people in East Austin have lived there for decades. You know, they have large families and they can't afford to pay their property taxes. So I think that if we don't get I really feel like it's this cost of living issue is the existential crisis facing Austin, and if we don't get it under control, then we're no longer going to have that great quality of life that people cite as the reason that they are wanting to move here.
And what's I know obviously you're an sort of individual council member's perspective. When you think about city council in general, and you're one of the group and then the mayor, of course, you know, what's their view of this cost of living? I mean, it's the second lowest of the 11 characteristics. It's the second lowest. And people commented a lot on it in the open-ended question component of the survey. You're only one vote, you know, so what's the rest of the perspective and how are they, is this a priority? How are people interpreting it?
Unfortunately, I mean, based on our growing budget and the growing tax rate, it hasn't been a priority for the city council. Like you said, I'm only one of 11 votes, so I can kind of get on my soapbox and talk about it. And I know that it is the thing that I hear. It's the most feedback about. It's not a surprise to me that it's kind of towards the bottom of your list, because it's the thing that I hear frequently from my constituents and actually people all across Austin. So, but there just hasn't been, especially in local government, I think the squeaky wheel often gets the grease, you know, and there are a lot of activist groups and people who have a lot of time to spend at a 12-hour city council meeting, you know, until midnight on a weekday to talk about funding their specific organization or their specific pet project. But the average taxpayer, the average homeowner, the average renter who's working, who has a family, I mean, they don't have the ability to be the squeaky wheel in the way that some others do. And so, you know, that's one of my charges as a city council member is to always remember that I don't only represent the people who come to City Hall to speak. I listen to them and I take their opinions into account, but I also represent all the rest of the people in my district who didn't have the ability to do that. So I hope, I mean, I, like I said, I feel like we're getting to a tipping point and that at some point we're going to have to face the cost of living issue. But unfortunately thus far, I mean, it's a lot easier to spend money than it is to save it. I mean, that we see that in our personal bank accounts too, right? Of course, when people come asking for money, it's a lot easier to fund whatever program it is. But so it does take some restraint in order to get us back on track, but the path that we are on truly is unsustainable.
You know, Ellen, one of the things, one of the other things that that people commented on, I wanted to get your perspective on, is the other characteristic that scores, you know, notably low. It's actually below neutral. So the 11 characteristics is the one that people actually see as a distinctively negative thing, is actually just kind of infrastructure and transportation, which obviously is something that the city and state basically play the dominant, you know, dominant role in. And I was just sort of curious, you know, of course you hear people complain about Austin, you know, commutes and all that. What's going on there? I mean, is city council talking about this? I think there's obviously a problem. I don't know if there's like a solution or if people are thinking like, what can we go do about this? Would love your perspective.
You know, it's certainly a topic of discussion, but not one that I think we have a true solution for thus far. And I think the reason that we're in this position is in part because the city as a whole for the past, you know, 20, 25 years has had this mentality that if you don't build it, they won't come. That we love our city the way it is. We're here. We've closed the door behind us. We would like you to go back home. You know, we'd like any of you visitors to go back home, which is maybe good in, you know, in your mind, but in reality, that hasn't stopped people from coming.
And how does that manifest itself politically? Because so many people talk about it and they don't actually, you know, but you're in a position where you can actually see it. And I've always been curious, how does that actually translate into politics and policymaking? I get the gist, but what are these people doing?
Two things directly. One is transportation infrastructure. There has been, I think, a concerted effort to choose not to invest in transportation infrastructure. And when we do invest in it, it's certainly not accommodating the vast majority of people who are traveling by car, but rather kind of a emphasis on bike lanes and walking, which, again, if you're fortunate enough to live in the city center and you have the ability to do that, then absolutely, I want you on your bike because it gets you off the road. But if you live in my district, you know, 10, 12 miles from downtown, and you're trying to drop two kids off at daycare before you head to your office in 100 degree heat, you're not biking. So we just have to be mindful that it's not one or the other. And there has been clearly a division, I think, in how we approach transportation policy. And again, I think a lot of advocates who have been involved in kind of the get people out of their cars side, which only works if people have an alternative. So an effective bus system would be a really great way to start. Unfortunately, you know, we don't even have near the kind of frequent or reliable service that we need, especially to the suburbs, that allow people any other option than to be in their cars. And then the second thing is, I think, in zoning and housing, which again ties into this idea of kind of keeping this, not investing in housing infrastructure, you know, being okay with having decades upon decades of conflicting regulations about what you can build and where you can build it and how much you have to pay in permitting. There was a really interesting op-ed that Representative Workman wrote recently for the paper that compared the fees for building an apartment in Dallas to the fees for building an apartment in Austin. And it was, I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was something really crazy, like $10,000 in city fees in Dallas and over $100,000 in Austin. So that kind of disincentive for people to build housing absolutely increases the cost of living, the cost of housing, right? It's supply and demand. If you don't have the supply to keep up with the demand, then the supply that you do have is going to continue to be more and more expensive. And there's just, again, this dynamic between kind of the business development community and neighborhoods and environmental communities that really go head to head at the city level on whether or not we should allow new development and how difficult it should be. So I'm hopeful that some of those questions will start to be addressed in this Code Next process. But so far, the path that we're on doesn't seem that it's going to be addressed as thoroughly as it should be.
Ellen, wanted to pivot, you know, kind of last topic here, and I know you've got a commitment, so we want to respect that. But I want to just give you an opportunity, you know, given your position, kind of talking to a bunch of different people and being able to kind of step back from the fray of business people who are doing their own. What kind of, when you think of, look at Austin and you think about innovation, what makes you say, you know what, I would be excited about what we have going on here? Here's some like recent developments that I'm like, you know what, this is great. This is positioning our city for forward momentum on this.
I think that the best way to do that is to do what we can to have a direct impact on lowering this cost of living issue that it clearly is a hindrance to innovators in our city. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the city council sets your tax rate. The city council decides your utility rates. So that's something that we have direct control over. You know, we can talk about a lot of other things that might, you know, in a roundabout way be helpful, but from where I sit, that is the decision that I have the absolute authority to make within the body of these 11 council members. So that's kind of where I would start, is just getting us back on a reasonable path of growth, allowing growth to pay for itself. I mean, one of the great things about the city is that we are growing. We have all of this new revenue from new people coming here, right? We have new development fees, new sales taxes that we didn't have last year because we had a lower population. So it's to the tune of about $50 million a year. So instead of kind of turning back to the taxpayers and asking them for more money, let's use the new revenue to keep up with our public safety services and all these other basic city services to let growth pay for itself. That's the concept that's kind of getting lost here. But we've turned economic theory upside down by choosing to have a city that is growing quickly, revenue is increasing, and yet still increasing the tax rate. That's really the opposite of that's a recession measure. Opposite of what you normally do in times of prosperity. So just really refocusing on what are the core things that this Austin City government should be doing well. And I, you know, roads is certainly one of them. And then just getting out of the way. I mean, there are so many, like I said, so many rules and regulations on these businesses that get everything that we can do to kind of review our existing policies, get rid of the things that really aren't critical to health and safety, you know, and let the really talented, really innovative people that we have here flourish and have that continue to be like the shining beacon of Austin, attracting more and more innovative and talented people here.
Ellen, thank you so much. This has been really fun, really interesting. I know you've got a lot going on. We really appreciate your time. So thanks for participating in the Austin Innovation Ecosystem Report.
Thank you. Appreciate it.